A Roof is a year-long project examining housing and homelessness issues in Alaska, produced by KTOO Public Media and 360 North. Contributors include the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, North Rim Bank, and the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, Juneau, in partnership with the Juneau Clean Air Coalition. The Generator Theater Company, KTOO, and 360 North present A Lifetime to Master, an original play about the homeless situation in Juneau, Alaska. It was written by Mary Ellefson, directed by Shona Osterhout, and produced by Flordolino Lagundino. It features the voices of M.K. McNaughton, Brian Crowder, Jacob Wade, Austin Tagaban, Carolyn Garcia, Becky Orford, Christina Apathy, and Jeff Hedges. The play is carved from interviews with over 60 people, all voices from our community.
Welcome. My name is Mary. A few years ago, my son Arnie and I went skiing out by the glacier. It was springtime, and the mountains were glowing in the sunshine. When we were done, we shared some snacks and headed home. I turned onto the back loop and drove by a young man, a boy, who was staggering down the middle of the road. So I pulled over. Another driver did the same. The boy fell down and stood up and then fell again. He mumbled something about how he had nowhere to go. We called 911 and tried to move him onto the shoulder. I remember looking over at Arnie. He was watching from the back seat of our VW Golf, finishing a Swiss candy bar. I didn't experience some aha moment with the mission, but after that I started thinking more about homelessness. Who's homeless in Juneau? Why? How does homelessness reflect who we are as a community? Maybe I wondered what would happen to that boy, somebody else's son, drunk and alone beside the road. So I talked to a lot of people, people who were or had been homeless, people whose lives were committed to the issue, city leaders, business owners, school employees, friends. At first, the problem seemed straightforward.
We have 562 self-identified homeless people.
Which means there are at least 1,000.
I'd say closer to 400.
The homeless are living among us, and there's a high percentage of Alaska Natives.
Let's see, 98 persons, 47 households. That's our wait list at St. Vincent's today.
Sometimes we have three families sleeping wall to wall in a tiny apartment.
There are 160 students, but it's underreported.
Okay, how do you define homelessness?
The thing that bothers me, and it's not right or wrong, but it bothers me, is all the transients who show up here homeless already.
We're the homeless capital of Alaska. It's stupid.
The more people I interviewed, the more complex it all became.
I became homeless when I went through domestic violence.
One of the most courageous things the Glory Hole has done is to reinstitute the breathalyzer.
Any single senior whose sole income is Social Security is not going to be able to afford housing in Juneau.
100% of the people who walk through the doors of our clinic downtown suffer from mental illness.
For the middle class, the Juneau housing market is healthy and affordable. For the poor, there is no Juneau housing market.
I encounter homeless people working for Parks and Rec. I'm just curious about it.
If I was the mayor, I'd force everyone to take a test before they had a kid.
One thing can happen, an accident, an illness, and change your life.
This is a lifestyle choice that should never be rewarded with public funds.
I was working until I went on disability.
As an assembly member, I'm so worried about this class divide in Juneau, and it's getting worse.
These nonprofit agencies don't know what the hell they're doing.
I'm not comfortable talking about the Native part.
The resolve to solve this issue locally is unmatched in the state.
I believe that, but I needed something to guide all these voices in my head. Fortunately, I met Phil. He's the pastor at Northern Light United Church.
A strange place to start, maybe, but when I was in Boulder, I was the director of the Council of Churches and Synagogues. And we needed more places for homeless people. There was an owner of what you might call an adult-oriented establishment named the Pleasure Chest. He didn't pay his taxes, and the Pleasure Chest became available. It was an old Quonset hut, and there were plenty of showers in it, and it was foreclosed on. So we were able to open our new homeless shelter in the old pleasure chest.
I thought this was kind of funny. I mean, it kind of reminded me of the glory hole.
Certainly, there's nothing exclusive about the church's calling. There are people of goodwill and other faith traditions that have a parallel, if not greater, commitment to social justice. I need to add that. But there's a board game called Othello. The discs are black on one side and white on the other. That's the Othello reference. And the tagline is, "A minute to learn, a lifetime to master." That's the shaping image for my ministry. I mean, why do we have to have structuralized institutions and weekly worship when it all boils down to the great commandment, love God and love your neighbor as yourself? It's pretty simple, really, but every encounter becomes another occasion to figure out what that means. Who is my neighbor, and how do I love him or her? I think that human beings are, we're all rooted in a particular story. I'm rooted in the Christian story. That's what shapes me. We talk about certain roles that are played in the Christian community, certain functions. Certainly Paul's image of the body of Christ. There are many members, yet we are one body. I think the point of the image is, well, I remember in one church I served, someone said,
"What we want is a diverse group of people who are just like us."
That sameness is antithetical to the teachings of, I think one of the valuable things we can do as a community is to hear each other's stories, know the full humanity of one another.
I bought the game Othello on eBay. They call it a classic game of strategy that takes a minute to learn and a lifetime to master. Well, it's pretty easy to learn, like you need a few minutes, but Arnie beats me every time we play. I was thinking about some of the other things Phil said too, like know the full humanity of one another. I talked to Charles many times. We first met in Heritage on South Franklin. He sort of cautiously walked in. I was nervous too.
I've been losing a lot of people. I sleep during the day, wake up at night. Every morning at 5, I do my rounds. We take care of each other. I check on folks sleeping in the parking garage or in those cars over by. Even though it was a mattress under a bridge, it was her home. Everything now is just day to day. I feed these four pigeons at A&P. I'll get a cup of coffee and just avoid trouble. I'm not broke. I do day labor jobs. I don't hang out with a lot of people. I don't normally come to this Heritage. You see, I don't like downtown. This is a bad place to hang out for homeless people. I hang out by the Salvation Army. That's uptown turf, and they have downtown turf. This is a violent place. This is a nighttime kind of place, even during the day. I wasn't always homeless. I was married for 8 wonderful years. We don't get to choose where we're born. We're just born. I tell my daughters that. I never drank when I was married. Then I don't know how the city tracked me down, but they did. But they came over on Super Bowl 30 and they talked to my wife. "It's the police! You better tell your husband to go register as a sex offender." Ruined my life. I lost my job and my marriage. It caused a mental breakdown. I'm not a drunk. I drink a few 40-ouncers just to get me through the day. You see, with alcohol in your breath, you can't go to the Polaris house. Or a lot of people can tolerate the glory hole, but I can't. There's no hope there. I used to be the James Dean of Juneau, driving 100 miles per hour down Egan Drive before the stoplights, you know. Today I will just take my vitamins and stay out of trouble. I'll probably feed those pigeons. If I could help one person, I'd feel like I'd accomplished a mission. I'd love to help before they mop the streets of somebody else, and that's why I speak.
Beth, be quiet! He is in the bedroom. Please, have a fritter. What I make, I share. Beth!
Shh.
We'll call you when we need you.
This is Anna. I talked to her in her apartment at St. Vincent's. No, I'm kind of full. How did you get this apartment?
I moved out of the shelter upstairs in March because it was open. Actually, this is my first time to live in a shelter. Other people probably find it degrading. I don't find it to be degrading. I didn't find it to be a hardship because I know how to keep myself going, not to be depressed, not to be anything. Now, have a fritter.
I just can't. So, it looks like, how many of you live here?
There's four in my family, plus pets. So, that's how it is. My grandkids and my brother. This is low income. I have to adapt, I don't know if you know where I'm coming from. I used to be a budget analyst for the federal government, and I loved my job. I do. I was making good money. Then, what do you call it? It is when you get your check cut in half because you are on retirement?
Reduced income?
Yes. My youngest daughter, she is in Alaska. She's my rebel, and she's very ill. So, I come to Alaska to help my daughter and take care of my grandkids. Here are some Alaska mangoes. I don't like them.
No, thanks.
I was grateful that they took me in here because if I don't know what I would have done. That man at Greening Park, he was not very nice. Well, because I have my ways. You know, there's my ways or the highways. So I took the highways. Bear, be quiet. Sam listens. Sam is the cat. See, she is listening.
Yeah, she really is. How did you make it work?
The manager upstairs in the shelter, he taught me how to survive in Alaska. He helped me fill out the disability for my brother and told me, apply for the caravan. So I did a lot of things, but I still feel I owe the state of Alaska. Yes, I do feel a little guilt, but...
Because you were helped out?
Yes. Yes, it isn't pride. I don't know how to explain it. Here are some cookies. I don't know how to make a small portion. They look a little burnt. I hope the kids upstairs in the shelter can still enjoy.
I'm not supposed to eat wheat, but she... It was nice getting to know Anna. Her apartment was cozy and full of leftovers and Nutella and pet food. We discovered that Arnie and her grandson had been in the same class at Gastineau School. I saw her at a potluck there a few months later. I think she took those fritters. Yeah, things were working out for Anna. This is Mark.
My mother was very instrumental in a collaborative effort between the best brains in the native community to put up that tram. I miss my mom and dad. It was so nice back then. Sunday was our family day. After church, we'd go to brunch. There was a competition between me and my brothers and sisters. Whoever got the best grades that week would get to choose where we'd eat after church. We'd all had our favorite restaurants. Mine was the City Cafe, right there where the tram is now. My sister's was the Prospector. After brunch, Mom and Dad would take us to the boat harbor and stroll around. Dad loved boats, and Mom...
I grew up on the water.
My mom and Dad were very well known, very respected. She was one of the founding members of Gold Belt, and they worked very hard to help structure the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
I took your father to meet President Jimmy Carter.
She was working for Governor Egan at the time. His political competitors thought it was scandalous there was a Native working in the White House. The governor would roll up his sleeves and get really angry in debates. I didn't hire her because she is Native. I hired her because she...
Because I am simply the most capable person for the job.
I believe it was 2002 when my problem started. I got mugged in Bellingham.
Your problems really started before then.
Yes. I was attending college in San Diego. My major was political science and my minor was Christian theology. One day, Mom called.
Dad has had 3 heart attacks in the last few months. They don't expect him to live much longer.
By the time I got home, I could barely recognize my dad. He was so frail.
He had been trying to quit smoking for years. Remember the game we used to play? It was like an Easter egg hunt. I would send you to find all the cigarettes he hid all over the house.
We'd get an extra dollar for every cigarette we found.
We'd be looking in the cupboards and under floorboards.
I found one!
I found one!
I found one! By the time my dad would get home, my mom would be sitting there shredding his cigarettes. My dad would get into arguments with U.S. senators, governors, lobbyists, folks in D.C. It didn't matter who it was. He wasn't afraid of anybody in this entire world.
Except me.
I like this new parking garage. It's warmer. This brain injury they gave me in Seattle is bad. In Bellingham, they're a little more polite about it. They just stole my wallet.
Your father died.
I was heartbroken. I moved to Bellingham. I ended up in a dead-end job. I couldn't afford to pay rent, so I became homeless my first time. So I signed up to work for Command Staffing in Seattle. You know that movie Sleepless in Seattle? They make it look so beautiful, romantic. But good God, there's gunfire and screaming. There's rapes and murders. There are a lot of native people living under the Alaska Way Viaduct. They're all just comforting each other. I was there too. They have a homeless center there called the Chief Seattle Club. And I was mugged twice in Seattle. The third time they tried to kill me. They literally smashed my skull open. Now I have these migraine headaches. Why do happy memories hurt so bad?
Good afternoon, Mark.
Hello, officer.
You okay? Are you alone? You're going to move on out of here, right? Move on outside?
Back toward the harbor.
Pack up your stuff, okay? If you need anything, you know where to find me.
I'm just a little shaky today. Later, I'll walk down to the water. I like the boats, the way they bob up and down. My heart rate relaxes there. I'm struggling right now in staying sober.
Summer, Mr. Shaw's string students were busking all over town. My son Arnie was one of the violinists. They were raising money for a trip to China, so the Brandenburg Concerto was background music as I talked to people or shadowed police officers downtown. Bach wrote that concerto for the royal family, but he never heard it played. I guess Mark's family also reminded me of royalty. So these kids spent the summer performing on sidewalks and street corners, and parents took turns chaperoning. They were supported by friends, families, businesses, tourists, and our very generous community. You know, they made about $19,000. It seems like this same community is raising the next generation of homeless. I was thinking a lot about our kids.
Is in the building.
Hello?
Hey, it's Jeffrey from Juno Youth Services returning your call.
Hi, this is Zane. We met for coffee last week.
It's Haley from the youth shelter at Northern Light.
You had a question?
Hey, Mary, it's Christy calling you back.
I'm with the Federal Work Program for Young Adults.
I'm the counselor at Yakutz.
From the Learning Center.
I drive the van, the Mobile Crisis Unit. You came out to Cornerstone last week and we talked. Look, I'm at work driving the van.
Yeah, thanks. I'm following up on our interview and I was really hoping to talk to a student or a young adult. Well, it's a high number, 200 homeless students in this district. Probably more, I mean. Is there a young person who's homeless who'd be open to talking to me?
Yeah, you know, I make contact with about 100 kids a month, but most of them aren't old enough to be interviewed.
There's a girl here who's pregnant, but she probably doesn't want you to know her story.
Just in the last couple of weeks, there's been a couple kicked out of their houses, but they're scrambling and not coming to school.
Can you get over to Front Street? Here they come now. They just walk everywhere. You can try and talk to them.
Most of them don't want to be a part of the system or a name in the computer.
How about if you email your questions to me at JYS? Maybe they'd be more comfortable talking to me.
Look, this is a really
bad
time.
I'll get back to you.
So, Mary, about half our students are homeless this year. What we deal with here at Yakutsk, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have a kid who's down in the trenches worried about food and shelter. They cannot possibly focus on academics, a higher level of self-actualization. We started by identifying 68, but probably 30 of those have fallen off the radar screen. Some are incarcerated at Lemon Creek. As you know, there's drinking and just multiple diagnoses. There's FASD and trauma from rape and abuse. And it's just, kids just can't stay on top of that. And so oftentimes they end up drinking or stealing and they get put away. Our jails are full of boys. And you know our system is not set up to be friendly to these kids. We are failing our kids.
We sleep in between buildings, in the hallways at Mendenhall Apartments. We walk around town a lot during the day.
I'm couch surfing.
Sometimes we sleep in a car at Walmart or Home Depot.
I'm 17. Right now, I'm in high school and working for this law firm. That's why I have this huge book bag. It's actually quite ridiculous, isn't it? But I guess when I was a freshman, two of my half-brothers got mad and left and said they never wanted to see my parents again. Up until that point, I had a great childhood. We had Christmas. We weren't wealthy, but we were comfortable middle class. My mom fell apart. She got depressed and all that stuff. And my family, the coping my family had to go through, we never had Christmas again, and I kind of got pushed out. I had to start taking care of myself. Thank you for the socks.
I was kicked out of JYS for consuming.
Sometimes we wait for people to be done with their laundry. Then he sleeps on the table and I sleep on the washer and dryer.
Sometimes I sleep in the tent. That sucks.
You know, I got my GED, but I can't go home. My mom, I thought it was normal, but my friends noticed the marks on me.
They are my heroes. God knows how they make it to school. It's so daunting, Mary. Where do you start?
My contract at the Learning Center is over.
We closed the shelter at the church.
The funding was cut for the mobile crisis unit.
It's one kid at a time. If we can make a difference in one kid's life, then we will have done something to make it worth being on this earth, as far as I'm concerned. I'm taking a break from this job for a while.
And so, this is the common area here at the Mountain View Senior Center.
I've never been here before. It's kind of nice.
Well, in a way, it's kind of a bummer living here. And that ambulance is always out here. You're always faced with death. And I'm getting older, and that ain't helping.
Mike, is there a good place to start to help me understand your story?
I don't know. It's a lot easier for me to answer questions, you know.
So you're a cook here?
Yep.
But you were homeless?
Yep.
How long?
About 4 years.
So what happened so you ended up homeless?
Stopped working. Job stopped.
What'd you do?
Logging. Logged most of my life. Just logging's always been out of town. Job here or there. And I end up getting my nose in the bottle again. Went back to Ketchikan and started getting into problems with drinking and certain women. I knew this the capital. There'd be more, you know, government help, handout, whatever you want to call it. So I jumped on a ferry. Left Ketchikan to get away from Ketchikan.
What happened when you got here?
Spent a night or two at Rainforest. One night at Lemon Creek. No charges. And I ended up going to Polaris House. You got a place you can live in the annex there. And I started going to the Learning Center. Got trained to be a cook. And I got hired in the kitchen here. It's been almost a year now. Man, fast year.
Can I ask, what happened so you stopped drinking?
Got sick and tired of it. I was real depressed. So I went to some VA psychiatrist and I got diagnosed. They put me on antidepressants, but I knew drinking was my problem.
So you're a veteran?
Yeah, Vietnam.
Do you think that's related to all this or how it affects?
PTSD.
You have taken some amazing steps to get yourself back on your feet. I mean, some people just don't do what you did.
I just went to Front Street because you get free socks and razors, and I started talking to Katie. You know, it was nice just to meet people who were friendly. Katie, she's a counselor. She helped me. She supported me. You know, I wanted to quit, but AA is not my thing. In fact, I can't stand AA meetings. You know, those people are so full of crap. See, a lot of getting help is you got to help yourself. You know, a lot of people just, woe me, you know, but you got to change from the inside.
Is there anything you think is important to share with our community?
I think there was a lot more help around here. You know, in the glory hole, a lot of people bitch about that, but you sleep where I slept a few times. Thank God, they feed you there. We done?
Do you have any kids? Family?
My first wife, I do. My grandson. He got himself into a little trouble, and they shipped him up to Johnson Youth Center. I helped him get straightened out. Well, last May, we climbed up that mountain. They call it Mount Juno. We went right up to the tower there. You know, most folks, they hike up the normal trail, right? Not just straight up the mountain. Well, we went right up past the eyeball. 4 hours up, 2 hours back. We did okay. You get up there, and your hands and feet hanging on. It gets pretty steep and brushy.
Yeah, I think they've rescued people from that route.
Yeah, there's a bunch of ledges. We stayed on the ridge tops. You know, I've walked enough mountains, tripped off the side, and sometimes you just can't get back up.
I talked to Ray in Heritage on 2nd Street. Ray, I don't know his real name. He was born in the old St. Anne's downtown, and he's probably my age. He wore layers of dirty clothes, and he smelled like urine and alcohol. He's native.
If you don't mind my saying something, I think that breathalyzer stuff, I mean, you take it the glory hole. I'm sorry to open it up. I go down there, and look, we're all street people. We live with alcohol. Then they give you some breathalyzer thing there. They're making homeless people starve now. They're already homeless. That's bad enough. Then they can't get a hot meal like everybody else. Who are you guys all in here? Christians and preachers and caring and all that? I was saying, it makes us disappointed when we have to walk out with this. It's a worse word than embarrassing. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
When Ray fell off his chair, nobody else in Heritage moved.
Well, it's ugly to us. It's frightening. We don't want to touch them. We don't want them to spread their germs to us.
Hello? Our fellow Alaskans are killing themselves right in front of us. Is everyone who walks by then complicit in these acts?
Just buy them a one-way ticket out, and it would save the taxpayers money.
In my mall, there's the Shambhala Center, and a lot of yoga goes on up there. And I watch people just gingerly walk over them up the stairs. Oh, excuse me, while they sit there and urinate in their pants. They are so coddled. Where is personal responsibility here? Why? Why? Why are they on Franklin? That's where the FARs are. They're addicted. It's out of control for them.
There's a difference between addiction, abuse, and dependency. We can see it in the MRIs.
I'm a firm believer that the glory hole needs to move. It's not good for business, and it's too close to the liquor stores.
There are at least 500 empty containers underneath the Emporium Mall, and they didn't come from Mars.
We have that cleanup group downtown now. Things are looking better.
It's bigotry. Tourism, I mean. They want them out of town for 4 months, but it's bigotry. It's prejudice.
It comes to responsibility as a community. I'm ashamed of downtown.
I learned that Ray had collapsed on the sidewalk right outside Heritage after we talked. He was clearly struggling. He was shaking, but I didn't... He'd slept in a truck with two others the night before. Rainforest Recovery picked him up, and he was in the emergency room. Things were not looking good, and where would he go from there? An ER doctor talked to me about the triangle connecting homelessness, substance abuse, and mental illness. He's taken care of inmates at Lemon Creek Correctional Center for 30 years.
What the f*** happened?
Sorry about your shoulder.
I think it happened a Friday night or Saturday. I don't remember. I slipped on some sand and fell.
How is it?
I didn't know it was broken. I went to the hospital on Sunday morning. There's no buses until what, about 5?
I drive, so I don't really know. Why did they bring you here?
Maybe I gave that van person a bad time. He was being an asshole. I was supposed to go on 12-hour hold.
When will you get out?
I don't know when I got in. What time is it?
It's about 12:15. It's Monday. Are you homeless right now?
Does it look like it?
I mean, yeah. When you get out.
Yeah. I just got my check, too. Could have bought myself something new, different. Hey, there's something wrong with this toilet.
It looks like it's plugged or something. Where will you go?
On a bus to town. Look at this.
It is really bubbling up there. How long have you been homeless?
Since last month. I was probably setting up a tent somewhere, but it didn't quite work out that way. I lived in a tent one whole winter. That was before my old man passed away. He fooled around on me and got gonorrhea and syphilis. I wouldn't touch him after that. That was it.
This may sound kind of weird, but is there anything that would help you out? I mean, do you want any help?
I realized when I was going to the bathroom, I just gotta quit drinking. I dislocated my shoulder. Hey, this toilet is plugged.
Do you ever go to Front Street Clinic?
They're not open till Wednesday.
Have you ever tried any rehab?
Yeah, I have. Anger management. I didn't last there very long.
So, I mean, do you feel angry?
I'm mad at myself for messing up my shoulder. Can't do nothing with it. I'm going to have to sober up. Sometimes I can't even go to work. Look here. It's bubbling up everywhere.
It is. It is not working right. I like your name.
I was named after my grandmother.
Was she Scandinavian?
No. She's Clinkett. Oh, no. You're going to have to tell him it's overflowing. How am I supposed to go to the bathroom?
Oh, my God. What was I doing? Did you hear me asking her if she was angry? It's just when I visited Lemon Creek, all those ringing sounds echo, and it's crowded, and it's suffocating, and there is nothing you can do to help. You walk outside into the day, right? And drive away. But there's one more story to share from there. This is Kali.
Kali, po. Before I was in Samoa. I just moved here to find a job. My dad wants me to come here and find the money for him. I was to start my life again, you know? I was have an apartment. I was have a big screen TV. But my neighbors, they party every day and every night. And they are too much loud. And I work. And I went to my neighbor and I said, it's a too much loud. Just try to keep your voice down. I go to work tomorrow. Then I fight him off and I came in jail. When I go back out, I lost my apartment, DVD, printer. I lost my big screen TV. I lost my everything. I don't have anywhere to go. That is the reason I am drinking, to keep me warm. I go outside jail 1 week and come back in. Go outside. I almost try to make a trouble and fighting because this is the place to keep me warm and feed me for free. I want to go back home. But I don't want to go back home with no monies. I want to go home and I tell my dad, "Hey, Dad, this is the money I went to find."
When I left that day, the prison guard said, "That guy just needs a job. He'd probably be okay." So the day after Thanksgiving last year, a couple of guys from Costco delivered our new TV. I was standing in the kitchen when the guys carried it past me, and I looked up, and Kale was one of them. He was wearing a dark green hat pulled down almost over his eyes. I didn't know where to look, so I looked away. Finally, I said something like, "Are you Kale?"
"Kale, Po. Have I met you before?"
The last time I saw him was in jail, and now he's delivering my flat-screen TV. I didn't congratulate him or anything. Kale has a job. He did it. No, I went upstairs to my office and shut the door. Arnie followed me up and asked what was wrong. I tried to explain how awkward it was. It's a small town sometimes, and his coworkers were there. What would I say? But my son didn't understand why I didn't just talk to him. Be a little nicer. I didn't either. A minute to learn, a lifetime to master.
You're listening to A Lifetime to Master, an original play about the homeless situation in Juneau, Alaska.
Come on in! I'm a polyp. And right here, this is our friend, Nolan the Colon. Nolan's here to show us what the inside of our colon looks like. Cool, huh? He traveled around Alaska to help with cancer prevention, and we tour right through him. I'm your guide, and I could be a symptom of something unhealthy. Look at this.
So our sleep-off facility here at Rainforest Recovery is 3 rooms. Our main office, it's this desk by the mattresses for women, but we don't get many of them. This over here is our shower area.
Remember Phil, the pastor? He talked about certain roles that make up a community, like the image of the body. We are many distinct and equal parts, and we all have an important, although not always glamorous, contribution to make. I was thinking about this when I was with Sandy at Rainforest, or when Kyle the Polyp led me through Nolan the Colon during Project Homeless Connect at Centennial Hall. It was part of his job as outreach director at the Glory Hole.
Boy, the colon hosts a regular zoo of bacteria. Look here. A polyp is a small clump of cells on the intestinal walls. When it's slightly raised, it's usually nothing. It looks benign. You find these in the early stages, and they're removed. No problem. But here, as we move further inside, ooh, look at this.
See? If they're really filthy and dirty, we just bring them back here in this shower area and wash them down and squirt them off. Most of them can't wash themselves. We've had people with seizures back here. We just hope to God we're close by when that happens. We can fit 3 or 4 men here. They get a warm blanket and a mattress on the floor. Evidently, that's nicer. I understand in Anchorage, they don't even get the mattress.
These cells kind of grow as a mushroom, and over time, well, see this darker raised area? This could be the beginning of something. Ooh, this could be cancerous. We can prevent this cancer, and it's easy. There's some information on free screening and detection at the end of Nolan there, right near the anus.
We've studied our high-end users, super users they're called. There are about 10 of them, the folks we pick up in the van. Between emergency patrol and hospital visits and detox, 10 super users cost the city about $1.4 million a year, minimum. One client costs the city $33,000 in 2 months alone.
And remember, you can get a haircut, lunch, housing, or medical advice in the other rooms. And don't forget the homeless rally this Friday at noon at the Capitol. Thanks. I just never thought I'd be a polyp.
I wanted to see who was working on the issues, so I went to conferences,
panel discussions, and meetings. When Reagan reduced funding for mental hospitals, thousands of mentally ill people were released onto the streets.
The educational system has failed 99% of the people in this shelter.
About 50% of these people are seniors or disabled. They're not going back to work.
Juno is a pretty stellar community in wanting to help folks, but I think there's a pretty broad misunderstanding that all homeless folks are drunks on South Franklin.
One of our best programs, one that builds self-confidence, is AWARE's Girls on the Run.
You, as a community, by your patronage of the St. Vincent's Thrift Store, you help support the operating budget of the shelter.
I said to Flinkett and Haida, you've adopted the white man's ways to deal with your own people. Anytime you take government money, they set the rules.
For $7 million a year, we can end it. I'm talking about affordable, green housing options in this community and at market rates we can afford. Yep, we could end homelessness here easily within 10 years, probably within 5 if we got our together.
Well, maybe 1 in 100 people choose to be homeless.
I told the chamber this is a poverty-stricken place. They didn't want to deal with that.
If our mistakes of the past 25 years have taught us anything, it's that nothing ends homelessness like a home.
If I was mayor, I'd make sure everyone could balance a checkbook, and then I'd lower the cost of rent.
Homelessness is a community issue, problem. As mayor, I think what we need to do is reprioritize our needs to make sure we're taking care of our situations that are most important to our community as a whole. That's the way I'd put it.
I went to a bunch of Juno Coalition on Housing and Homelessness meetings. They meet the third Thursday of the month. Their goal is clear.
Working together to end homelessness.
I connected with people who provide services and support to those who manage shelters and housing, new leaders, and persevering pioneers like Sharon.
I suppose you know I was basically responsible for getting mental health services in Juneau because I didn't let them say no. Isn't that great? My son became ill when he was 15. This was in the early 70s. We didn't have a psychiatrist in town. We didn't even call it mental illness back then. He stopped wanting to go to school. He was learning disabled dyslexic, and I believe he was anxious or embarrassed by that, and I helped him. His counselor called me one day and said, I let him come into the office during the day because he acts like a caged bird going down the hall. He slinks around and looks behind his shoulder. He told me someone was trying to kill him at Eagle Crest, wanted to push him off the chairlift. I don't think so, honey. I remember saying, you sound like you're just paranoid. That's exactly what it was, but I didn't know what a paranoid behavior was. This went on and on. He was given a battery of tests, and he was sent to Santa Barbara, a great school, and they had a psychiatrist there. That's what happened to kids who were mentally ill or seriously emotionally disturbed, as we call it now. He was discharged there when he was 18, and, you know, they wouldn't tell you anything until you were 18. And then they said to me,
he has schizophrenia.
What does that mean?
It means he has a mental illness, and he's probably going to need treatment for most of his life.
Here are his medications.
What is schizophrenia?
Well, if you read the book, I Never Promised You a Rose Garden, that will help.
Oh, it's nothing like it. It's awful. Now I know there are 350 different kinds of mental illness. It helps to know they differentiate themselves a little differently. That's when I found out about the National Alliance for Mental Illness, NAMI. There was a woman in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks, and they had sons who were mentally ill. And we formed a statewide alliance. Isn't that great? The most troubling time is between the ages of 15 and 25. That's when our homelessness begins. It starts when you don't pay the rent or you're too spooky for the neighbors and you become homeless. So in the 80s, we wanted to start the Juno Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and I knew we needed money. First, we put an ad in the paper. If anyone has someone in their family with mental illness, please come to a potluck. And so we had 4 or 5 families come together to start. Isn't that great? It included George and Jean Rogers. And when we said, gee, we need some money, George said, you need a grant, and here's how you do it. He hooked us up with someone at the university who would do a little research project for us. We got a grant for $10,000 to find out if there were any people in Juneau who were mentally ill, right? Well, they decided there were 200 people who qualified. So we went to the legislature, and Jim Duncan got us another $300,000. My son never had to experience homelessness, but JAMI is pretty big now with programs and services and group homes. Isn't that great?
Paul is a therapist at Search.
This cannibal giant was killing people, killing their game. It wasn't good for this village, so they were determined to expel, kill, and do whatever they had to do for this cannibal giant. So these warriors, they would prepare, you know, saltwater baths, prayer. They prepared themselves for war. They got their bows, their arrows, their spears and knives, and they went after this cannibal giant. And the first time, they were not successful. They lost guys, and so they went back with a renewed vigor, and they were able to do it this time. They burned this cannibal giant, but in doing so, a lot of sparks are coming out. Mosquitoes. The belief behind the story is that this is where mosquitoes came from. This cannibal giant got back at them by having mosquitoes come out. Alcohol is our cannibal giant. It's killing our sons and our daughters. It's more involved than that because I just gave you the Reader's Digest version. But this is what you need to do. You need to go at it as if it's a battle and prepare yourself. And you might not get it the first time. So, persevere. You are a warrior. Continue. Our belief now is that we need to address the historical trauma before anything else can be done. We also call it blood memory. That means basically whatever my parents, grandparents, great-grandparents went through, I'm affected by that. I'm 19 years sober myself.
John works for Gastineau Human Services.
I give people a chance here, but don't lie to me, because first of all, I don't care what you did. See, they've been lied to their whole lives. They've been abused, sexually, mentally. They've been beat up, unstable. That's how they ended up here. They were tossed away. But I don't care. Whatever your story is, let's start fresh right here. Our mission. Yeah, you'd think I'd know. Well, this is the Juneau House. The Juneau House is a drug and alcohol-free transitional housing to afford men and women the opportunity to change and build a foundation on which to become independent. So they can be referred here from agencies like Rainforest, or they can come off the street or the halfway house. I put together a budget. My ultimate goal is for them to raise $2,500. That's enough for a down payment if you use this place for what it is, a stepping stone. Sometimes people move to Juneau from the villages because they need to find work, and I got the cheapest rent in town. So I say, would you like to live here? Yeah, John, I'd love to live among the trees. Well, if you want to live in Southeast, the only place you can find work is Juneau. So don't tell me you can't find a job, because if you can't, go back to where you came from, because you're just taking up space for somebody who can. Or they say to me, you got to help me. I got child support. I got bills. Well, you had that when you came in here, and you're going to have that when you leave. That's not my problem. My problem is, right now, you don't have a place to stay. I'm going to give you a cheap place. So when you make money, don't go out and spend it on 35 hats. So, it was about 4 years ago. Yeah, I wanted to quit. It was the 4th of July. I was out walking on the ball fields, and this guy walks up to me.
Hey, John.
Hey, what's up, man?
I did it. No one believed in me, but you gave me that chance. I got a girl, a truck. I'm making a living. I'm still on parole, but I'll make it. I just wanted to say thanks.
I don't cry anymore. Not that I ever did, but... Okay, between 300 and 400 people have come through here. There might be 50 of those people out there that are doing good. We're doing okay.
Maria manages the Glory Hole and runs many other committees related to homelessness. I would vote for her for president, except it wouldn't be legal.
I'm from Russia. where we're like jerry-rigging everything. And now I'm working with people where we're like jerry-rigging everything. I don't know if you saw my desk. I love my desk.
And Norton has come full circle.
I grew up in Tlingit Haida Housing Authority apartments in Cake, and now I oversee all of our rental facilities in Southeast. My mom just made the final mortgage payment on a Cake home. Our CEO believes every family should be able to purchase a home, if possible.
Our mission? The Glory Hole is an emergency homeless shelter / soup kitchen / community center, and we provide 3 meals a day, every day, and offer many services to support daily needs. We are part of the fabric of this community.
The Tlingit Haida Regional Housing Authority was created by the state of Alaska in 1972 and works to provide quality, affordable, decent housing in Southeast Alaska and promotes self-sufficiency for families and communities.
Why do I like my job? I have issues, philosophical issues with jobs that I think, what does it mean in the big scheme of things? And so, when I was looking for this job, I thought, wow, provide food, compassion, and shelter? I don't think I have any philosophical issues with that.
We have a lot of feel-good moments here. This is an extreme example, but once there was a family of 6 living in a small 4-door Toyota Tercel. The mom worked day shifts and the dad worked night shifts. They were gainfully employed. We made a difference in their lives by providing a place to live. Approximately 2,000 people in Southeast live in our facilities.
And my job is so satisfying because I love my clients. Sometimes I see them downtown in a suit and tie, and we just wave a little. It's so awesome.
This is such a good community. For so many reasons, but I think people aren't aware. The low-income tenant is the person who works for Alaska Airlines who's checking you in for your flight, or a school district employee, or a police officer.
And my peer group is amazing. And also, it puts me, like, in the middle of all the goodness of humanity.
And sometimes people make mistakes, but we're all people. And at the end of the day, we all need a place to live.
All this goodwill and resources funnel into me, and I get to distribute them to people who really need it. And also, I really love how we get things nobody wants, and we turn them into something, like old food.
As you probably know, I ran for assembly because I believe we need diverse representation. People in authority positions can do 2 things. 1, they can go out of their way to help people. Or 2, they can be a poop about it.
Last year, we provided almost 53,000 meals for like $4,000. This is magical to me. And most meals are people donating food or something that may have been trashed. And I think, actually, on most days, we have the best food in town, with the exception of the Thai restaurant.
Homelessness is a community problem. I might run for office again.
My story doesn't have an interesting starting or ending point, but it's coming to the conclusion that each person's desire to live life with less suffering and more space for positive emotional experiences to exist is the fundamental human condition.
This is Kyle again.
And what I want to guide my work and moments.
Among a lot of other tasks, like being a polyp, he was hired to coordinate Juno's first vulnerability index survey.
It's based on a national effort to create an accurate picture of homelessness here. The hope is to get our most vulnerable in a permanent housing situation.
Like the super user who cost us $33,000 every 2 months.
They're safer, they make healthier choices, and it makes sense economically.
I helped with the indexing.
I needed 35 volunteers, and they signed up right away. We had a training workshop at Northern Lights, and you should have seen the people who showed up. Students, hospice workers, lawyers, educators.
And Barbara.
I came because I believe if you're going to breathe the same air and live on the same soil and enjoy and improve our homes, then the most vulnerable are our business. There's no color to it. I'm a shareholder at Sea Alaska Corporation, and the homeless are living among us, and there's a high percentage of Alaska Natives. I wanted to be more informed about what indeed is our situation with our homeless brothers and sisters.
The indexing was held the last week in March. Teams met at 4:45 a.m. for three mornings in a row at the Glory Hole. We had eight groups driving to all parts of the borough, from Beyond Off Bay to Walmart to Sandy Beach to Outer Point, and I'm handing packs full of tea, surveys, and socks. Remember, when you find someone, talk softly and say, "Good morning, I'm not the police." And don't shine that flashlight in anyone's eyes. I'll see you all back here at 8:30. Woohoo! I directed operations from the Glory Hole.
Grace, I think that was her name. She was our team leader. She walked down that dark hallway. It was very hot. It felt like 90 degrees because we had just come in from the cold. It was Grace, Jordan, and I.
Hello. Good morning. We're not the police.
And she just had this wonderful sound to her voice, so gentle. That's not me. I have this tinge of fear in my voice at that hour.
There's no one here.
Maybe so, but somebody was here.
How can you tell?
I can just detect it. Somebody was here.
Hello? Hello? We're not the police.
What? What time is it?
Good morning. Good morning. We're sorry to wake you. But we'd like to ask you questions, if you're up for that. You're not required to answer, and we can stop at any time.
Are you really serious? What time is it?
5 a.m. We could come back tomorrow.
Just do it. Let's just do it.
First, if we could have you sign this consent form, and then if we could take your photo. We're developing this index. I'll ask you a few questions about your housing history, and then we'll move on to health.
What's the total length of time you've lived on the streets?
Where do you sleep most frequently?
Cars?
Shelters?
Bridge?
Other, please specify.
How many times have you been to the hospital in the last 3 months?
Have you abused drugs, alcohol, or been told that you do?
Are you currently or have you ever received treatment for mental health issues?
Have you had a brain injury that required hospitalization?
What kind of medical insurance do you have?
If any.
Have you ever served in the U.S. military?
What war?
What was the character of your discharge?
How do you make your money?
What is your gender?
Ethnicity?
Highest grade in school you completed.
What was the primary reason you became homeless?
And then around 8:30, we'd meet at the Glory Hole and debrief, tell stories. There was so much cohesion and momentum and... Okay, I think we really rocked it today. Woohoo! Good effort, everyone. Help yourself to some donuts over there, and tomorrow we're going with the same game plan. Same maps, same teams, same energy. Team Thane, go back to spots where you made contact or saw fresh signs. Get some sleep. I'll see you all back here tomorrow at 4:45 a.m. After it was over, I wanted the momentum to continue. 55 people participated in the survey. 74% of this population is deemed vulnerable to dying on the streets. In Anchorage, it's only 45%. See, I would love it if this job would be to bring everybody up to here. Let's talk about building love between parents and children instead of dying of renal failure at age 40. Let's all start a little bit higher for the next generation.
People have been working for a few years to develop plans for Juno's Housing First project, a permanent supportive home. This was the goal of the indexing, to fix, not manage our problem. Our Affordable Housing Commission unanimously supported this project in 2013. Then it stalled, and now it's moving forward. The Glory Hole is spearheading it, and Tlingit and Haida Housing Authority have donated the land. Our assembly just committed $1.5 million to this project. There are a lot of other good things happening. We have a mayor who's asked us to make homelessness a priority, and even our legislators are talking about housing. We're building at Aware and St. Vincent's. Housing is a priority in the new Juno economic plan. We have money. And
there's very few out there that's good. He's good. Most of these people here, it's a nightmare. It's an unusual situation.
This happened one day in Heritage when I was...
I'm going to speak and don't interrupt me. In other places, there is a balance of good and evil, but there's nothing like that here. There's some good. He's good. They're afraid to talk, because the majority is just worthless pieces of crap. They hurt people. A wink and a nod. This is an unusual situation, because you have some evil, wicked, wealthy people who run this town. White, educated church people, and wealthy clinket leaders, and they are corrupt as hell. And they're one group, and the middle class and the poor are scared to death of them. Because if you go against them, you will get hurt. I don't care who you are, okay? Because they pick and choose who they hate. Oh, he's a good. They ought to just shut Jammy, the Polaris House, the Glory Hole. The evil, wicked, wealthy people control these places. And anybody who's with these places has to take orders from them. They control all this. A wink and a nod. They should just shut Jammy, the Polaris House, the Glory Hole.
Excuse me, but I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
There is an Eskimo woman from up north. She followed me up the stairs and I moved aside. Covered my face with my arm. My body crunched against the rail. And she flung around with brass knuckles and blood.
Please,
all over here.
You've been asked never to return.
The suffering I've been through from those wicked wealthy people.
If you won't leave, I'll have to call the police.
This is hell here. There's nothing like it on Earth.
Didn't that group Smart Asset vote Juno the number one capital in the nation recently? We have one of the highest rates of millionaires in the nation, and we're the healthiest community in Alaska, right? An assembly member told me homelessness should be easy to solve. I mean, I've been told our challenges range from Alaska's dependence on oil to the breakdown of the Klan system.
We need more police on the streets.
A six-month rehab facility.
More job skills training.
300 more housing vouchers.
A no-candle-burning ordinance in low-income apartments.
More parenting classes.
We need to understand Juno apartheid.
It's our stupid system of developing affordable housing.
One-third of all Americans are one paycheck away from homelessness.
Homeless people want food and shelter? Do something for it. Wash windows. Shovel. Tie my shoe and I'll give you a dollar. Just do something.
And who's in charge of all of this? No one, really.
Remember Charles? He loves to feed the four pigeons near IG Hay. Well, now they've painted Do Not Feed the Bird signs all over the parking lot there. And how hard has it been to get the Haven House built? Where do women go when they get the bus pass from jail? We're cutting bus service to low-income neighborhoods, and do you think we can build a Housing First project as fast as we built a new parking garage? People with mental illness comprise one-third of the homeless in this country, and Alaska ranks the highest in some of this: domestic violence, alcoholism, suicide, stupid politicians. It's messy. There's a lot at stake, and sometimes I don't even like the neighbors I meet. How am I supposed to love them? I just thought somewhere along the way here, this community could tackle this problem together, but I don't even know how to fit in.
My name is Michael Patterson. My Tlingit name is Hin-Yah. I'm Tlingit, Raven, Coho, from the Yah Hit House. I became a homeless person at age 9. I came down here to South Franklin, and I lived here for 2 years. My dad used me like a punching bag, and he was also beating up my mom, and she would vent on us kids. She would chase us around with electrical cords and whip us with those. My brother sexually abused me. I came to the conclusion that if I didn't get out, I was going to die. And nobody caught on or cared. But I used to sneak into apartment buildings before they locked the doors, and sneak down to the furnace rooms and hide behind the boilers. I'd wait for the building to settle down so I could fall asleep by the sound of the furnace. Early in the morning, I'd sneak out of the building and go wait outside the grocery stores. As soon as they'd open up, I'd eat fruits and stuff off the displays.
Basically, I'd shoplift what I could to feed myself through the day. I lived like a rat, in a sense. So, you know, my self-worth was, it was destroyed. At age 17, I was living out at the juvenile division at Lemon Creek, and they let me out every day to go to JDHS. I began to build a wall around myself to protect myself, to insulate myself. I didn't realize until later on in life this wall I was building was actually a prison. I built it so strong that I couldn't break out of it, and I couldn't let anybody else inside. Basically, I lived as a street person till I was 37. My girlfriend got pregnant, and it threw her hormones out of balance. And she was bipolar, and she also became schizophrenic, which was a nightmare. Basically, I got into a 3-year custody battle for our daughter. I won. It's rare for a man to get sole legal and physical custody, but that's what changed me from being a street person. My dad never, ever once said to me, "I love you." So that is something I told my daughter many times a day, and today we have a really strong emotional connection, strong to the point where I worry for her heart when I die. I'm stage 3 COPD, chronic obstructed pulmonary disease. I've already had the top of my lungs cut off. I could die from a severe cold or flu. Because it shuts my respiratory down, I can't breathe. You may have seen or heard me on anti-smoking ads talking about my grandkids. Last year I was chosen by the CDC to become a spokesperson against tobacco use, maybe like a national anti-Marlboro man, without the horse. I began smoking at a very young age, and it's become my life mission to save others from this kind of suffocating death. Somebody once said to me, "It appears to me you don't have the ability to forgive people." You see, there are a lot of people that did things to me that they really should have been punished, like my dad and my mom. There are a lot of street stories. I'm supposed to forgive all these people? I began to learn that I wasn't forgiving them for their benefit, I was forgiving them for mine. I needed to forgive them so I could be free. I'm skipping around. Everything from the beginning was telling me I was a bad person. I lost hope. It's a long story, but God just basically intervened in my life. He was the first one that validated that maybe I was important. That maybe I was loved. Maybe there was a purpose. I grew up in a deep, dark violence and pain to the point where I was ready to destroy myself. But there's always been a noble peace inside of me. I don't know where it came from. Some nobility. You know, Mary, when you share something beautiful with somebody, you're creating a memory. And at the end of your days, that'll be something you'll be able to enjoy. I've been able to accumulate a lot of those, like sitting here and talking with you now and you buying me this mint brownie I've never tried before. That's big for me. That's a memory. Thank you.
I remember something else Phil said when I talked to him.
I don't think it's insignificant that basically Jesus lived his life as a homeless person. You know the verse, "Foxes have holes, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head."
I know Michael Patterson isn't Jesus, but he speaks to students about abuse and homelessness, about breaking that code of silence and getting help. He's on a mission, and he is dying.
She's pregnant again. She grew up homeless and in the system, and she's going to keep having babies until the state stops taking them away from her.
Police say no foul play is suspected in the death of a 63-year-old man found in a ditch near Twin Lakes Park last Sunday.
If I was the mayor, I'd call the heads of JEDC, Lands, the Housing Commission, the Homeless Coalition, and Community Development, sit them in a room and say, you have the tools. Work together. Give me a housing plan in 6 months. Solve it now. It would be closed door shouting at people like a Chris Christie kind of thing.
I truly believe we need to do it now, or cleaning up downtown could be insurmountable in 10 years.
The easy part of my job is the clients. The difficult part is the red tape. Holy cow! That's why I'm quitting.
I'm with my sister, and they're drinking Listerine. I read the label, Mary, and it says dangerous. Do not swallow.
If we don't change things, Juneau will become a backwater capital of aging boomers with the highest homeless rate in the country.
I look around at us all, and I am just impatient.
They're making homeless people garbage.
Okay, folks, pack up your stuff and head on outside.
I heard a speaker say something once like, when we improve the lives of those that are homeless, we improve the lives of those who surround them. And I wonder, could we get every neighbor into a home, however you define that? Kyle told me a story. It happened when he was canvassing the borough to check out possible places for the indexing. He was under the Gold Street Bridge. It was February and cold. The wind was howling.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Anybody want some tea?
Maybe.
Who's here?
I've got oranges.
I would like some tea. Thank you.
These look good.
My name is Kyle. I'm just checking in on you here. Are you warm enough?
It's cold and hard. My husband, he got crushed by a garbage truck. That's when I gave up. I've been moving around a lot.
Want some? I want to get sober, but I can't do it down here. I want to stay warm. I'd love to see my grandkids.
One guy fell in over there. They found his body underneath the Douglas Bridge.
Sometimes there's four to a bed, and sometimes it's too crowded, and one of us has to go over there. We don't tell anybody they have to leave, but sometimes people get mad.
We don't have enough space.
I wish I would have had a tape recorder. I would have loved to have played it at an assembly meeting or legislative hearing. Or the one woman who took the tea, she was, I can still hear her imploring.
We need help.
Gloria was found dead there on a mattress a few days later. Her needs were complex, and the time was impossibly short. But it leaves a sense of failure.
On March 22nd, it will be 3 years since Gloria Plummer died. I watched my teenage son grow, and I still keep thinking about that young man beside the road on that sunny spring day. He must be about what, now, 25? Where is he? I hope he ended up getting support. I learned a lot from the brave and complicated neighbors who shared their lives and jobs and ideas with me. But what do we do after we listen to their stories? Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to A Lifetime to Master, an original play about the homeless situation in Juneau, Alaska, produced by the Generator Theater Company. It was written by Mary Ellefson, directed by Shona Osterhout, and produced by Flordolino Lagundino. It features the voices of M.K. McNaughton, Brian Crowder, Jacob Wade, Austin Tagaban, Carolyn Garcia, Becky Orford, Christina Apathy, and Jeff Hedges. It was produced for radio by Jeff Brown. To hear it again or pass it on, please visit projects.360north.org/roof. A Roof is a year-long project examining housing and homelessness issues in Alaska, produced by KTOO Public Media and 360 North. Contributors include the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, North Rim Bank, and the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, JUNO, in partnership with the JUNO Clean Air Coalition. Thanks for listening.